Mister, that's a my big dog you got there.
Help me, Jesus! Help me, Jewish God! Help me, Allah! Ah! Help me, Tom Cruise!
It's Linderman Unleashed on Natural News Radio.
You tell him I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear?
All opinions and views expressed on Linderman Unleashed are strictly those of the host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Natural News Radio. Warning, this program might cause you to think for yourself. Listener discretion is advised. And now, here's your host, Kurt Linderman.
That's right, I am Kurt Linderman, the guy that has the face for radio. Flying solo once again. Kim is still feeling pretty bad here, folks. As I said, I'm flying solo. We have got a packed show for you tonight, folks. I'm telling you what, a lot of articles I've researched painstakingly, and one I think I'm going to do it last. We might end up having to do part of it in tomorrow's show. Real heavy about mitochondrial dysfunction, but something that's really pertinent to all of us, and it's going to blow your mind when you read this or when I talk about this study. But first off, I'd like to give a huge congratulations to Professor John Walker Smith, who was just exonerated. Now, Professor Walker Smith is one of Dr. Wakefield's co-authors in the study that got Dr. Wakefield made him lose his medical license, and the media just excoriated him, and they threw him out of it. Well, he came to America on his own, but might as well have thrown him out of England. The GMC, General Medical Council, just blatantly railroaded him. And now John Walker Smith has been retired since, I believe it was 2001, but he wasn't going to let this go. He was going to fight to get his medical license back because of the injustice. And I love, he said something to the fact, I read it on an article today, and it's not on the article that I've got in front of me, which is the Canary Party press release regarding this issue. But he said something to the effect of, he's not sorry at all, because this was ultimately about the kids. And, you know, God bless him. He's such a nice guy. He's just a wonderful guy. The Canary Party did send this press release out, and I do believe that this Canary Party press release actually made it on Yahoo. So congratulations to the Canary Party, of which I am a proud member of. If you haven't checked out the Canary Party, I would really suggest that you do so, canaryparty.org. If you're against all the medical bullcrap that's going on, the GMOs, everything that's destroying our planet, destroying our health, you should check into the Canary Party. Kudos to them for getting this press release out there. Dr. Andrew Wakefield's co-author on controversial Lancet MMR paper, completely exonerated of all charges of professional misconduct. A world-renowned pediatric gastroenterologist, Professor John Walker Smith, won his appeal today against the United Kingdom's General Medical Council Regulatory Board that had ruled against both him and Andrew Wakefield for their roles in the 1998 Lancet MMR paper, which raised questions about a link to autism. Now, those of you familiar with autism and familiar with my show, you know Dr. Wakefield. Hell, I've interviewed him probably six times on my previous radio program. And boy, was he railroaded. And when you look at the paper and everything, there's just no doubt that he was railroaded. But those of you that aren't familiar with him, if you do read articles or see it in the news regarding anything having to do with vaccines whatsoever, the first thing you're going to see in that story that you're going to see every time, in every single story, it doesn't have to be about the MMR, it could be about the flu vaccine. When they're talking about, there are people out there that have issues with this vaccine, you're going to hear about Dr. Wakefield and how his work had been completely obliterated, the Lancet withdrew the article, blah, blah, blah. Well, here's the other doctor involved in this, Professor John Walker Smith. And this judge pretty much just blew the GMC out of the water. I'm not going to go through the whole article because we've got so much to discuss today. But Justice John Mitting ruled on the appeal by Walker Smith, saying that the GMC panel's determination cannot stand. I therefore quash it. He said that its conclusions were based on inadequate and superficial reasoning, and in a number of instances, a wrong conclusion. The verdict restores Walker Smith's name to the medical register and his reputation to the medical community. This conclusion is not surprising, as the GMC trial had no actual complainants, no harm came to the children who were studied, and parents supported Walker Smith and Wakefield through the trial, reporting that their children had medically benefited from the treatment they received at the Royal Free Hospital. Now, these were enterologists, okay? Dr. Wakefield, John Walker Smith. There were 13 doctors that originally had signed on to this study. All but three left when all the scuttlebutt started happening. They were the cowards. And I don't care if they had children or they had their careers to think about. We all have children. And if you can't stand up and say this was good science, you're a coward. You're worthless. Okay? And I don't care if John Walker Smith and Wakefield are still friends with these guys. They walked away from true damage done to children because they were worried about their careers or their safety or what have you. Just cowards in my book, but John Walker Smith is not among those. Just a great day for him. You know, a lot of the parents that were involved in the initial study regarding how the vaccine MMR, the combination vaccine for the measles, mumps, rubella, had a possibility, and this was a theory. They never said MMR causes autism. They said, look, we're seeing a correlation here, and this needs to be looked at further. And it all got blown out of proportion. That's why these people were gastroenterologists. They were dealing with the gut issues that these kids that had been vaccinated with MMR exhibited. So, once again, wonderful, wonderful outcome. I really was worried about it. I honestly was. Today, almost 14 years after the paper was published, the High Court determined that John Walker Smith was innocent of the wrongdoing alleged by the GMC. British parents from the group Cry Shame, which is a great group as well. Check them out on the internet, Cry Shame. They've got some incredible videos regarding the whole thing right from the beginning. Some just great stuff. Google Cry Shame. British parents from the group Cry Shame, which includes parents of the Lancet 12. Now, the Lancet 12 were the 12 kids in this study, okay? Issued a statement saying that they welcome with immense relief the end of the 8-year ordeal of Professor John Walker Smith and the quashing of all substantive charges against him in the High Court, and wish him their heartfelt congratulations at finally clearing his name. Though justice has finally prevailed for Professor Walker Smith, the damage done to him and his colleagues has been incalculable, said Mark Blaxall, chairman of the Canary Party. The UK government must investigate the corruption in the GMC, which has severely damaged reputations of good, honest doctors. Most of all, it's outrageous that Dr. Andrew Wakefield has been vilified by government officials, vaccine manufacturers, and physician organizations, and that the media has accepted these unfounded accusations uncritically. Well, that's just a given. You know, they're whores to the vaccine industry because they've got to pay their, you know, they're getting paid by them. Look at the advertisements on the TV every time you watch the news. Now, Jennifer Larson, who's president of the Canary Party, said, it's time that we started treating responsible parents as reliable witnesses to serious adverse reactions to medical procedures such as vaccination. The work that Walker Smith and his colleagues at the Royal Free Hospital did with the Lancet 12 was medically necessary and above reproach. No patient complained, and the charges against the Royal Free team came only from a freelance journalist writing for a Rupert Murdoch newspaper. Meanwhile, the findings reported in the Lancet paper have been replicated in numerous scientific publications and reported by thousands of parents all over the world. That is the truth, even though you don't hear it. When you hear about Dr. Wakefield, and you know, you don't hear about Walker Smith as much. Dr. Wakefield really took the brunt of it. But when you do hear about it, they always say his studies have never been replicated. And you call the news. I do this with the local news around here. I call them and say, man, how many times do I have to tell you I've sent you the replicated studies? It's been replicated 5 or 6 times, people. Now, this one I like. This is from Ginger Taylor, who's the executive director of the Canary Party. She really put it on. It is quite obvious to me that James Murdoch, Brian Deere, and GlaxoSmithKline orchestrated the smear attack on Dr. Andrew Wakefield and, of course, John Walker Smith. She goes on to say, a judge has now ruled that the GMC hearings were a farce. Parents are waiting for journalists to find a spine and start some honest reporting on the character assassination of doctors that is blocking medical treatments for vaccine-injured children. And I concur 110% with that policy. I think it's time that we started demanding that the media do their job. It's not going to happen. That's why you're probably listening to this program, because you can't trust the news. The alternative media is without a doubt the only place you're really going to hear this. I'm going to be really surprised tomorrow if I see it on the morning shows. I'm going to be severely surprised. On to other news. Once again, congratulations. I know I'm saying that a lot, but congratulations to John Walker Smith. Well deserved. You've been through hell, brother, and God bless you and Godspeed. Campbell's responds to concerned parents and commits to removing BPA from cans. Brothers and sisters, this is exactly what Kim and I talk about on this program. This is actually pocketbook activism. This is making a change by simply telling these idiot corporations, if you continue to poison us, we just will not buy your products. Bye-bye. Have a nice day. And that's what it takes. You know, we've got the FDA that's about to rule on this BPA issue, okay? And you know the Chemical Manufacturers Association is lobbying, as they do every time issues like this come up. And I can almost guarantee you with 99% certainty that the FDA is going to come out again and say, you know, it's grass, generally recognized as safe. We're not going to pull it, okay? But we don't have to look at the FDA. The FDA can kiss my rosy white butt. All we have to do is say, I'm not buying your product, and they change. Now, this is from Alicia from the Canned Food and Learning Center. I don't know where Kim got this article, actually, but March 6th is the date on the article. It felt like a rumor when I first heard it. Is the All-American Soup Company really going BPA-free? It's true, and I can't tell you how much I'm savoring the success of parent-driven grassroots movements like Cans Not Cancer. They created the kind of change that legislation often can't. Now the question is, when will the transition actually happen? Some of their products have already been switched over to BPA-free containers, but they haven't announced which. For now, it's best to stick with brands that are already confirmed BPA-free. In the meantime, let Campbell's know that we're thrilled with their decision, but would like to know more about their planned timeline. And also, I would like to say, now let's attack them for MSG. Because MSG is in almost every one of their products. So let's not stop here, folks. The excitement isn't quite over yet. They're going to anxiously await FDA's long overdue decision about whether BPA should be banned in all food packaging. Now, that decision is going to be made on March 31st, 2012, is what they're saying. Here's hoping that the chemical industry doesn't sway the FDA again. I'm sure we can all agree that the next chapter of this story will involve learning exactly what materials are being used to replace BPA. That is another key factor, folks. We can't just sit idly by. And that's what I love about so many of these organizations. They're not going to give it a rest now. You know, it really bolsters your spirits when you win something like this and you make this kind of change. And it really gets you fired up. And I don't think they do very well if they put some other dangerous ingredient lining that can. I'm thinking they're starting to get a glimpse of the activism that truly is out there. And these companies better start taking note. They damn well better. Now, this is another one regarding food. And if those of you out there that aren't aware of this, this is going to make you want to retch. And especially if you have school-aged children. Now, this article is from David Knowles, okay? And yesterday's, or day before yesterday's date, feds keep buying ammonia-treated ground beef for school lunches. Now, Natural News actually did an article. This was about 6 or 7, maybe even 8 months ago, about that pink slime and how the beef in fast food restaurants are washed with this solution that's like window cleaner, and it caused an uproar. And I think that Natural News had a lot to do with getting the McDonald's and the Taco Bells and the Burger Kings and Wendy's away from using this. But apparently, the USDA, being the good little slaves that they are, when the beef industry said, hey, we're losing all this money. Well, hell, we'll just buy more for school lunches and you'll get your money. The U.S. Department of Agriculture's continued purchase of so-called pink slime for school lunches makes no sense, according to two former microbiologists at the Food Safety Inspection Service. Here it is. You notice it said former microbiologists at the Food Safety Inspection Service? This one guy went in to a plant to look to investigate a salmonella outbreak, and he saw this stuff for the first time. This pink slimy crap that looked kind of like Play-Doh or something, and that's when all of this came to light. In fact, he kind of coined the term a pink slime. Before that, it was called the Food Service and the USDA actually called it Soylent Pink. Now, those of you old enough like I am to remember the movie Soylent Green, you know, that's kind of where that came from. It was Zernstein, and Zernstein's the guy that saw that pink and coined the term pink slime. He was investigating a salmonella contamination, okay, at Beef Products Incorporated, or BPI. And we got a lot of BPIs around the Midwest, and they render beef. That's what they do. Now, pink slime is made by grinding together connective tissue and beef scraps normally destined for dog food and rendering. BPI's lean beef trimmings are then treated with ammonia hydroxide. Ammonia hydroxide is window cleaner, folks. A process that kills pathogens such as salmonella and E. coli. Now, I finally, and I had it questioned here later on in this article where I made my highlights and everything. I'm like, why in the hell are they calling this lean beef trimmings? And I just figured it out as I'm sitting here reading this, you know, in front of the mic, and I figured it out. It's lean of beef because there's no beef in it. Other than these little scraps, most of it is connective tissue, cartilage, and they grind it up and they almost liquefy it and they make it into this slime, and then they wash it all down and soak it in window cleaner, and then it's used as an additive in ground beef. Now, they say it's an additive. When you think of additives, you think about I'm adding something to it. And normally when it's an additive, you're thinking, well, like like they lie and say, we're adding vitamin D to milk, and most people think that's a good thing. It's more of a filler. It's more of a, you know, we're going to continue charging the same price, but we're going to use this pink slime connective tissue and beef scraps from dog food, and we're going to add about 15% of that to your beef, and you're never going to know the difference. That's ultimately what it is. And with the public outcry, McDonald's and Burger King and what have you, the fast food restaurants said we can't use it anymore. Once again, pocket activism, pocketbook activism. They said the people don't want it. And the USDA said, well, fine, we'll feed it to their kids at the public school level. For retired microbiologist Carl Custer, a 35-year veteran of the Food Safety Inspection Service, the idea of mixing in BPI's lean beef trimming into more nutritious, pure ground beef was itself problematic. We looked at the product, and we objected to it because it used connective tissues instead of muscle. It was simply not nutritionally equivalent to ground beef. My main objection was that it was not meat. Custer said he first encountered the product, which gained fame recently as pink slime, in part due to the efforts of celebrity chef Jamie Oliver back in the late 1990s. Despite voicing his concerns to other officials at the Food Inspection Service, however, the USDA ruled that lean beef trimmings were safe. The word in the office was that Undersecretary Joanne Smith pushed it through, and that was that. Custer said, now get this, appointed by President George H.W. Bush, that one world government slime bag piece of crap, in 1989, Smith had deep ties with the beef industry. Before she became the undersecretary at the USDA, Smith had deep ties with the beef industry, serving as president of both the Florida Cattlemen's Association and the National Cattlemen's Association. Can you say revolving door here, folks? This is what goes on consistently. And wait till you see where this bimbo is now. Scientists in D.C. were pressured to approve this stuff with minimal safety approval, Zernstein said. Now keep in mind, Zernstein was the one that coined the term pink slime. A baseline study conducted by Zernstein and Custer classified the trimmings as a high-risk product. Zernstein says the Food Inspection Service ignored their findings and commissioned a separate study to assess the safety of BPI's meat. In other words, we don't like what you determined in your study, so we're going to hire somebody else, and we'll keep hiring somebody until we get the results that we want. And that's exactly what they did. But Zernstein and Custer say the USDA now finds itself in the odd position of purchasing a product that has recently been dropped by fast food giants McDonald's, Burger King, and Taco Bell. My objection with having it in the schools is that, once again, it's not meat. In 2005, the USDA limited the amount of ammonia-treated lean beef trimmings in a serving of ground beef to 15%. But here's the deal. Very lax labeling requirements, and that means it's virtually impossible as a consumer, and especially for kids at school. If you're a parent of a child at school, it's impossible to know if there's only 15% of this connective tissue and beef trimmings for that would normally go into dog food, washed with window cleaner. If it's just 15% of the beef that your children are eating at school. And it's hard to know whether it's given whether a given package of ground beef or hamburger patty contains any of it. The USDA AMS, which is the Agricultural Marketing Service, does allow for the inclusion of BPI boneless lean beef in the ground beef they produce for all their federal food programs, and according to federal labeling requirements, it is not a raw material that is uniquely labeled. In other words, they don't even have to put the fact that this pink slime is an additive in the beef. You cannot look at a package of beef and it's going to say pink slime or lean beef trimmings. It's not going to say it. They don't require them to say that that's been added. Last year, the USDA said that 6.5% of the beef it purchased for the National School Lunch Program came from BPI. But they're using this more than in just BPI, I believe. I can't imagine they're not. Now, go to my Linderman Unleashed Facebook page. Linderman Unleashed, that's all you got to type in. It's going to show you the page for the show. And there I have a link to learn how to sign a petition telling the USDA to stop using this in school lunches. Now, here's another reason why you want to worry about whether this is in your lunch. Aside from the lack of nutritional value, pink slime raises a number of health and safety concerns. The New York Times exposed in 2009 that despite being treated with ammonia, three E. coli contaminations and four dozen salmonella contaminations occurred between 2005 and 2009, during which time school lunch officials three times temporarily banned hamburger makers from using pink slime from one facility in Kansas. Now, when I heard about those, and I never once heard the story that it was the pink slime that caused the problem. Never once was any show talking about the pink slime that I remember. Ammonium hydroxide is itself, of course, harmful to eat and can potentially turn into ammonium nitrate, a common ingredient in homemade explosives. Can you believe that, folks? All right, I'm going to tell you what. We do have a lot to get through, and I don't even know if I'm going to get to the mitochondria story until tomorrow. So much news to talk about, and I've got another article coming up, but I am going to try once again to play my commercial for Dr. Tenpenny's Vaccine Research Library. I'm going to tell you what, I got a call from, or an email from Dr. Tenpenny today saying the commercial's working, we're getting visitors to the site, they're purchasing, doing a great job. I want to thank my listeners for supporting my sponsor, and I want to encourage other sponsors to take a look at advertising opportunities with Linderman Unleashed. But understand, I've got my guy coming tomorrow to take a look at my computer system. I have one heck of a nasty virus here. I am going to, once again, as in the last 2 days, attempt to play this commercial.
Wouldn't it be great if all the vaccine research you need would be in one place, along with the latest news in the vaccine industry? Introducing the vaccinereserchlibrary.com. That's vaccinereserchlibrary.com, brought to you by Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. It's a living library that grows constantly, so you'll want to check in every day. At vaccinereserchlibrary.com, you'll find dozens of articles that are gleaned from the conventional medical literature daily, with links to abstracts and full-text articles posted in the library. It's shocking to know that nearly every day we find conclusions and hidden admissions that vaccines are not safe and do cause harm. To shed light on this quickly, the homepage has an area called the Scream of the Week. You can post these links on your Facebook page and share through other forms of social media. The Scream of the Week will allow you to rank the information, and the five-star screams will be posted far and wide, sent out to radio, print, journalists, and television outlets. You will get to help us determine what information needs to be broadcast to the world. Get informed, be empowered, and help empower others. Visit VaccineResearchLibrary.com every day.
Well, I thought I was going to get through it. It started sounding good. You know, that's one of the things about living out in the boonies, folks. My computer guy is an hour away, and my computer guy is actually my nephew. He does this stuff for a living, and he tried to get on today remotely and fix it, and he said, I think it's your sound card, and I think it's hardware issue. And he's got to bring a part out tomorrow. Hopefully that will rectify the situation. Gonna have to bear with me. Like I said yesterday, you're not listening to this for the frills. There's no frills on Linderman Unleashed. This particular article kind of takes us back to yesterday's program. Well, this pretty much the theme of the week, if you will, as far as personal freedom and individualism and the way these commie idiots are trying to take that from us. And a couple of weeks ago, I was listening to a sheriff on the Alex Jones Show talking about this kind of very issue where the feds are trying to take away the job, really, of sheriffs. And we're going to talk a little bit about the ICLEI, which I'll explain what that is, and Agenda 21 from the United Nations. Now, in California, particularly in Northern California, they're adopting UN Agenda 21, which is regionalism and attempts to neutralize county sheriffs. Labeled as tinfoil conspiracy theorists, called crazy and lambasted for the inclusion of Tea Party property rights activists, and repeatedly told that they were imagining things, California property rights advocates may not be so crazy after all. Now, a lot of us understand that this whole green movement and this whole global warming BS is exactly that. It's BS. It's based on lies. But here's the deal. And don't get me wrong. I'm not this right-winger guy that thinks we should just be pumping oil into the oceans and or out of the ocean floor. And if some leaks happen to occur, screw it. You know, I like to think of myself, although you wouldn't know it by my language or my attitude at times, I like to think of myself as a good Christian guy. And, you know, God requires us to be stewards of the planet, and I do believe that. And there are a lot of people out there that are really into this green movement thing, and they think they're doing the right thing because it's about being stewards of the planet. But when you start really looking in to the whole green movement, you're going to find out that this has nothing whatsoever to do with the planet except for controlling those of us that are humans that inhabit this planet that are inferior to the elitists and the destruction of population of humans on this planet. And I do firmly believe that. And I find it kind of ironic that they consider global warming to be an issue where we could all end up being dead from global warming, which is a farce. But their plans to use that kind of an agenda has the end result that they talk global warming has as far as depopulation of the Earth. Now, they can call us conspiracy theorists all they want, but there's been a lot of people in Northern California and Southern Oregon as well that have really had issues with a lot of the policies going on right now. And probably 10 years or if not more. And they're really worried about all the regulations on private property, ranches and what have you. And they've been saying all along, this is Agenda 21. This is an issue to take our land from us. And for years and years, they've just like the anti-vaccine community, oh, you're nothing but a bunch of crackpots. You don't know what you're talking about. You're just a conspiracy theorist. Go away. Go back and get your tin hat on. You know, nothing to see here, folks. Well, it turns out, in the case of the attempts by UN Agenda 21 supporters and promoters who had for years successfully painted anyone who opposed their intentions to surrender portions of California and the entire U.S. to UN Agenda 21, stack and pack housing, and the end of rural property rights, these characterizations mentioned above were quite successful. Those who oppose handling any portion of the state, handing over any portion of the state over to UN-controlled regionalism were tinfoil hat conspiracy theorists. They were simply right-wing extremists, violent liberals, depending on which side of the, you know, the political spectrum was under fire at that time, wing nuts, and a host of other commonly used metaphors to describe anyone who does not voluntarily submit and comply to the United Nations plan to deconstruct the United States. Now, let's first take a look at Agenda 21. For those of you that aren't familiar with it, Agenda 21 is a United Nations program. It's called a Program of Action. It was first voted on or ratified in the Earth Summit in Rio. Agenda 21 is a comprehensive plan of action to be taken globally, nationally, and locally by organizations of the United Nations system, governments, and major groups in every area in which humans impact on the environment. The Commission of Sustainable Development was created in December 1992 to ensure effective follow-up of UNCED to monitor and report on implementation of the agreements at the local, national, regional, and international levels. It was agreed that a 5-year review of Earth Summit progress would be made in 1997 by the United Nations General Assembly meeting in special session. This is not about global warming. This is not about the environment. This is about the one world government, folks. This is how do you have a one world government that is tyrannical as these people profess to be and actually show themselves as if you have private property. Private property are owned by individuals, and the one world government does not want individualism. Individuals think for themselves. They don't have group think, and therefore is not going to be allowed in the New World Order. We as individuals and individual property owners are not going to be allowed. Now, you know, I would think that this would either come first from New York or California, and sure enough, it came from California. Now, according to promoters of Agenda 21, that was a 1992 agreement signed by Bush, did not mean anything. These same promoters claim that Agenda 21 was an old, obscure document and that efforts to highlight the link between this insidious agreement and the current trend of forcing rural agriculture property owners off their land, particularly in North Carolina, California, was simply not true. Heather Gass did a little searching of her own. Now, this lady did one heck of a job. She came across a tax return from a 510c3 nonprofit called ABAG, which is kind of funny if you think. All I could think of, you know, ABAG, okay. Those of you laughing, thanks for getting it. Which ABAG actually stands for Association of Bay Area Governments. But I'm telling you what, there's a lot of ABAGs out there. Not only did she locate the 1997 ABAG tax returns, but also policy statements from 1997 showing a federal grant in the amount of $1,704,537 funneled into UN Agenda 21, ICLEI planning and initiatives, and this has been in effect and carried forward since that year. Now, let's look at ICLEI. ICLEI was founded in 1990. It's the acronym for the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives. The council was established when more than 200 local governments from 43 countries convened at our inaugural conference, the World Congress of Local Governments for a Sustainable Future, at the United Nations in New York. A World Conference of Local Governments for a Sustainable Future. That sounds UN to me. You know, very nefarious organization, just like, but you know, the thing that gets me is here's this ABAG, Association of Bay Area Governments, that can't pay their bills, can't hire more teachers or police officers or firefighters, but they can, back in 1997, offer almost $1.75 million to this group to further this agenda of taking. Now, keep in mind, you know these are taxpayer dollars, and they're giving it to these organizations that support the ICLEI and Agenda 21, a United Nations program that's specifically designed to take your personal property. Now, if you own personal, I know there's a lot of people out there that don't pay property taxes, they're renting or whatever, or they don't pay federal income tax because they end up getting more money back than they paid in, that kind of thing. If you're a property owner in California, trust me, brother, you are paying your fair share of taxes. And this area government, ABAG, government agency, is taking that money and giving it to organizations that want to take your land from you. Isn't that just a kick in the rear? The attacks on property rights are facilitated by dangerous changes to land use codes and zoning, rendering many property owners unable to enjoy the full use of the land they are paying taxes on. The object is to make land ownership so untenable, so useless to the individual, that the idea of property ownership will be out of the question. Now, according to this Heather Gass, the ICLEI tax return for 1997 clearly states on page 2 that it is involved with Local Agenda 21 and specifies the budget for it. And she also included a copy of the ICLEI Local Agenda 21 planning guide on the front cover. And the planning guide, the front cover, shows Uncle Sam with a sombrero, a big, you know, a big sombrero, with the words, "I want you to get used to it." Can you imagine the audacity of these idiots? I mean, they really do want to start a revolution. They're spitting in our faces, people. I have to take a drink without... Normally, I try to take a drink and wet my whistle while Kim's talking. I'll sometimes even give her like an eye, like, okay, I need a drink. Can you talk for a minute? Your throat really gets dry when you talk for an hour nonstop. Even when confronted with the facts, proponents of Agenda 21 and their nonstop efforts to end property rights continue to deny any connection to this unconstitutional agreement. Sustainability, smart growth, smart cities, biodiversity, non-human habitat zones, land use codes, going green, and other assorted buzzwords and catchphrases all come from UN Agenda 21 and are used liberally by those who are promoting this overthrow of private and individual land ownership and control. Consider it a form of conditioning to facilitate peaceful compliance to the surrender of all U.S. land to control of the United Nations. That is the ultimate goal, folks. And you can deny it all you want. It's definitely out there. There's no doubt about it. The writing is on the wall. It's just crazy. Now, here's another thing. Darren Moser found this, and it was on C-SPAN, and they were discussing HC Resolution 353. Now, get this. HC Resolution 353. It was a bill expressing the sense of the Congress that the United States should assume a strong leadership role in implementing the decisions made at the Earth Summit by, get this, developing a national strategy to implement Agenda 21 and other Earth Summit agreements through domestic policy and foreign policy. By cooperating with all countries to identify and initiate further agreements to protect the global environment, and by supporting and participating in a high-level United Nations Sustainable Development Commission. Can you believe this? This was being voted on. It's just crazy. The plan for One Bay Area is ground zero for the implementation of the first United Nations region within the United States. I'm going to tell you what, my friends. The minute that the United Nations steps boots on this ground as far as taking over land, it's on. There are way too many individuals woken up right now. It is on. I happen to think they should kick everybody out of that damn building in New York. Tell them to get the hell out. But when the boots hit the ground and say, this is our land, it's on. This council is intended to eventually supersede local and state governments, although it currently is supposed to be only the conduit for homeland security interference within the states. And now this council that they're talking about here, it's a council that Obama started. Now the UN divided this country for future purposes. They already have made the plans to come walk in and take everything, okay? And the UN divided the country into 10 mega regions under Bush, number one, Bush Senior, and our own government under Obama established the Council of Governors by executive order. The Council of Governors right now is, that's the council that I just referred to that was really, right now they're saying, well, no, it's all about homeland security interference, okay, within the states, so they can work together, okay? But this council's already been, this is going to be the council that's going to take over and take these property rights from us. It's a known fact that this is what it's all about. It's just that Obama doesn't have enough of us brain dead yet. In fact, he's probably really scared right now since we're all waking up. But there's not enough brain dead people out yet to really tell the truth. So he's saying this is about homeland security. Key to all the efforts to render privately owned rural lands as unusable by the current owners is the interference, harassment, and intimidation of ranchers and farmers by the United States Forestry Service, the EPA, and NOAA. The focus of their efforts is to make rural land ownership so untenable. We already talked about that basically people aren't going to want to own land. It's the intentional destruction of the rural economy. And think about it, folks. Just like we were talking about land ownership, and they're not messing with people that own a little house in the city because they can be taken care of easy enough once all the crap hits the fan and the economy crashes, okay? They don't like the rural landowners like me. And they really hate the ranchers that have thousands of acres and have all their own food and farms and beef and everything else and guns. I've got 20 acres and can pretty much be self-sustained. They don't like that. Once again, they hate the individual. They cannot stand that. They want to ruin the rural economy. They want to take our land, make it government owned, and they're going to say the reason for it is, you know, the ranchers, the cows are pooping everywhere and running off into the groundwater and running off into streams and going to the rivers, not that they give a damn about all the glyphosate that they're spraying on the farm fields right next to the Mississippi River, for God's sake, that's not a problem. But I think it's actually going to come to the point where it's like all those cows grazing on land out there, it's not good because all their poop, when it rains, is running off into the streams, which make it to the estuaries, which make it to the rivers, which make it to the Gulf of Mexico or the Pacific or Atlantic Oceans. So we're going to take all of them and shove them into CAFOs where we can control their, they think they can control their bodily fluids and excretions. I personally believe that that will be the case someday, but ultimately it's about getting everybody into the cities. I've mentioned this before on this program. Imagine, if you will, when the lights go out. Imagine, if you will, when the food trucks stop running, when the gas stations run dry, when the TVs shut off because there's no electricity, and the refrigerator shuts down because there's no electricity. Imagine the pandemonium that will ensue. And millions, tens of millions will die within the first week of that happening. Sound like anybody that we might have been talking about in the past couple of days? Maybe his wish is coming true. That's what's going to happen, folks. Plus, imagine how hard it is to get somebody infected with a virus that's released. Let's say, an avian flu virus that maybe might be released by the government and then blamed on terrorists, probably Ron Paul type terrorists. Imagine how hard it's going to be if everybody's not stuck real close together in big cities. You know, and they don't want the last bastion of the American people out here holding on to be us rural people with all our guns and food. They don't want that, folks. So what do? They're attacking the sheriff's offices. These county sheriffs have all of the authority. And you know, in the movies, you always see the county sheriff. And in researching this article is when it first kind of dawned on me, because I didn't know how much authority a sheriff had until I was listening to the Alex Jones show. I think it was last week, maybe. But Sheriff Mack was on, is what it was, I believe. But I never realized how much power they have. In the movies, and I don't know if this is just you know, a director's or a writer's idea that the federal government's more powerful than the local government, which shouldn't be the case, but I'm sure you'll all agree with me. You're watching the movies, and it's always some bumbling, normally fat white guy who's chewing on his lip or some kind of cud-like tobacco, and the federal agent in the black suit and the black sunglasses comes in, flashes his federal badge, and the sheriff gets all pissed off and walks away. "You're not taking my jurisdiction," and the government says, "Yeah, I just did." I thought that's the way it could be. I thought that the federal government could walk in, the FBI could walk in and say, "I'm taking over this investigation," or whatever it is. That's not the case. Apparently, a county sheriff can tell an FBI agent to get the hell out of his county. I had no clue. But this is what's going on. They're trying to neutralize the power of the sheriff's offices. "Before any federal agency or agent can conduct any investigation or trespass onto private property, coordination with the county sheriff's office must be conducted. The sheriff has the power and authority to deny the federal agency access." That's pretty cool. In fact, most sheriffs across the nation willfully ignore the rights of their county residents and pander to the federal agencies. There can be no doubt the recent public statements from Sheriff John Lopey, Sheriff Gill, now these are all in California, Sheriff Gil Gilbertson, Sheriff Palmer in Southern Oregon, and five other sheriffs, they're not backing down here. They're not acquiescing their authority whatsoever. They're not giving it up. "To the effect that they would defend the constitutions," that's their statement, "both state and federal, and by extension, the rights of property owners in their counties. Upset the federal apple cart." That's what they're doing. So used to violating property rights without interference, and so accustomed to having it presumed they were the highest and final authority when they showed up, it must have come as a shock to see these sheriffs honoring their oaths. After all, how many public officials do these days? Now, this is how they're combating and trying to usurp the power of the sheriff. And it is a draft of an MOU or MOA. Okay? This is how they're going to do it in California. "The governing body of each county that chooses to participate in the MOA shall designate a county contact for the United States Forest Service and the BLM. Now, I'm not exactly positive what the BLM is. I've had it circled, and I'm just going to be honest with you. I forgot to look it up before I got on the air. But this is a general premise. They want a contact to have to liaise with the feds. That contact is already there. He's called sheriff. But they don't want that, because this contact can be chosen, can be selected. Sheriffs have to be elected. So they're just saying, no longer the sheriff, we're going to make a contact. And you know what they're thinking. Yeah, those counties that, and right now it's not mandatory. What they're saying is, those of you counties that would like to participate in this MOA, you can sign on, and then we'll assign you a contact. We'll have a person, a contact person. You will have a contact person at the county level that will liaise with the feds. Now, do you think that they're going to say, and that contact person will be elected and your local property owners can elect him or her? Hell no, because they say right here that it will be a position. It can be a position. It doesn't have to be a specific individual. In other words, even if somehow a county takes this position and fulfills it with their own appointee and the feds don't like it, they can get rid of that appointee and just keep that contact as a position and put in who they want. They are doing everything, and they're so blatant about it. If you want to look for it, they are doing everything in their power to usurp all authority away from the individual. That your county sheriff, you should get to know really well. And I'm preaching to myself too, because I have yet to go down and meet my county sheriff, and I can guarantee you sometime this week or by the end of next week, I will have done so. I might even have some good videos for him to take a look at, and maybe a link to that show that I listened to last week on Alex Jones. Your county sheriff is the person that you want to make sure that you know, that you vet the next election, that you know exactly what he believes and what he or she thinks about personal property and individual rights. I had no idea until I researched this study for today's show just how powerful that sheriff can be and what a huge asset he could be in the near future when everything goes to crap. You should get to know your county sheriff. There is no doubt Northern California, along with parts of Oregon and other western states, are under attack from foreign agents. The United Nations is a foreign agent that is attempting to sequester and hold off limits major portions of valuable lands, much of which is privately owned at this time, and they are being helped and facilitated by federal agencies and politicians. It is unfortunate that not only are residents and activists having to fight the plans of the UN, but more so that they are faced with battling other United States citizens who have aligned themselves with dangerous and malicious federal agencies and who work against their own communities in efforts to implement these unconstitutional plans. That's really just silly. And you know, I was thinking about this yesterday as I got off the air. I'm sitting there thinking, how many times did I say scary or frightening yesterday or since I started this program? And I consciously tried not to say it today. But this is scary and frightening. I learn more every day about what's going on. And it scares me and it frightens me. We should all be scared. I'm telling you what, folks. This is so powerful. The information that we should have available to us that I'm trying to bring to you, that naturalnews.com is trying to bring to you, that the other hosts on this show and all the alternative media out there that are trying to bring this information to you, man, all I can suggest is that you take it and do your own research and be prepared, folks. Be prepared. Check out my website, viralsepidemic.com. I've got Shelf Reliance. It's freeze-dried food. We're going to be talking to the sponsors. They're going to be a sponsor of the show. I've already got their link on my website to start selling some of their products. They have some emergency products. They have three-day emergency backpacks for when the crap hits the fan. They've got freeze-dried food that is really actually quite good, and I'm telling you because they sent me some to taste and check out. And even Caden loved the dehydrated corn and the dehydrated strawberries, and they were really powerful tasting, and he ate them like candy. It was really good. And so check out my website, viralsepidemic.com. Check that out. I'm telling you what, folks, somehow or other, I don't care if it's through me or through another organization or just going to the grocery store and getting dry goods, I would suggest that you do that. Things are getting pretty hairy out there, and it's better to be prepared and not need it than need it and not be prepared. That's all I got to say about that. We're going to be back here for Friday's show tomorrow, and we're going to talk about mitochondria. We might take a lot of time talking about this mitochondrial issue. Until tomorrow, do not forget, the gloves are off. Have a great one.